You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and I'm your host, Heather Vail. Joining me today is Trinh Dang, Executive Director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI, Southern Nevada. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and NAMI is part of the national movement to raise awareness about mental health. Trinh, thank you so much for being here today.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on.
So what exactly does NAMI Southern Nevada do?
So many things. We offer education classes. We have weekly support groups. We have trainings, presentations. Really, we're just out there to help educate the community, raise awareness around mental health conditions, but also to provide support to families and individuals that are impacted by mental health challenges as well.
What are the criteria to be able to take advantage of your services?
Really, it's open to anyone. We don't ask for insurance. We don't ask for a diagnosis. So if someone is feeling like they're struggling with their mental health, having challenges and need that kind of support, they can just, if it's an in-person support group, they can just drop in. If it's an online support group, they just register and sign up. So they'll need a Zoom account to be able to do that. And for any of our presentations during this month, we have weekly presentations at either Sahara or Clark County Library. And they can just drop in for those presentations, anything that we do online with webinars. Most of the time it's through Zoom. They just need to register online to get access to that. But that's really it. Just people who want that information, who are interested and want to be a part of it. Even with our education classes, as those come up, we've been doing them mostly virtual. We're hoping to get them back in person soon. But they would just register and sign up with us so that we can get the materials, curriculum to them. And it's at no cost to the community.
Wow. That's great. With May being Mental Health Awareness Month, what would you like listeners to know about mental health?
You know, it's really important that we look at mental health like how we look at our physical health, our dental health, our vision health. We have those preventative screenings. We check in with our doctors to make sure everything's going okay. Even though we brush our teeth every day, that's our daily habits and, you know, self-care. But we still go into the dentist to check to make sure things are going well. We have our, you know, our optometrist that we might check in with. And mental health is the same way. We have our primary care physicians where they might ask questions regarding our mental health status. There's things that we could do every day, such as exercising, meditating, journaling, things that we do for self-care, like our own hobbies, things that we enjoy spending time with family and friends. But then sometimes there might be times where we need to check in with a mental health professional or a doctor, someone who's trained specifically in that area, if, you know, we are struggling with our mental health for a long period of time. And so just to know that it's part of our health and that it's okay to check in with someone or even to open up and talk about our feelings. Because as we talk about our feelings, I've learned over the years, because I haven't always been that kind of person that talks mm-hmm. about feelings. I grew up in a family that was, you know, very closed off. We kind of kept our emotions to ourselves. We didn't really express a lot. But I've learned as I started therapy maybe about 5, 6, 7 years ago, the more I was able to share, the more healing I went through, the more I was able to process that information, the more open I am now to be able to talk about it. But if you would have met me 5, 6, 7 years ago, I would not be able to share some of the details that I share with people, with my experiences. We just want people to know that they're not alone, that mental health and mental health struggles is just a part of life. We all go through challenges in our lives, and sometimes we get that support from our friends, from our family, and sometimes we need that extra support from mental health professionals as well.
You mentioned growing up, not expressing your emotions and feelings, and I think a lot of people can relate to that. And in fact, you know, sometimes there's a societal stigma around seeking therapy or seeking mental health treatment of any sort. How do we remove that stigma and let people know that it's okay?
I think the more that we talk about it, the more that we share, it kind of removes that shame, that guilt, that fear of we're the only ones. And to be honest, 10 years ago, I had a lot of stigma. I had parents that had mental health conditions and I would say awful things to them. I didn't understand what depression was. And like, you know, some people might think that, oh, it's just laziness or they don't care. And that's far from the truth. And for me, when I started experiencing physical symptoms, like I would get stomach aches, my hands and feet would hurt. I was at one point sleeping for 12 hours a day, waking up feeling unrested, feeling tired. And I kept going back to the doctors year after year, whenever these things would happen, and try to get my blood tests. And I would tell them, I think I'm low in iron. There's something going on with me. There's something, you know, physical. And after running all the tests, they were like, no, it's not. You know, it's showing up fine. Your iron levels are fine. Have you thought about taking medication? Have you thought about looking into a mental health professional for anxiety and depression? And my first initial thought was, no. Like, it can't be me. It's not that bad. Like, I still work. I still have friends. I still have a boyfriend. I go out. I'm just having some struggles and I'm just tired all the time. And I, you know, have all these aches and pains in my body. And then I think after the third year, I finally just caved in and was like, this keeps happening. And it just got worse and worse to the point where it was impacting my social life, where I didn't want to go out with friends. I just started isolating. I, you know, was having a hard time keeping up with schedules and appointments for work. I was missing and losing things. I was missing appointments, and it just wasn't in my nature and my character to do that. And so I finally was like, you know what, I need to reach out and I need to get help. But I oftentimes think back to maybe if that first or second year, if I would have just got help the first time around, could I have prevented it from getting to the point where I pretty much got let go from my job because I couldn't keep up with everything. And I didn't know how to say, you know, I'm struggling with my mental health. I didn't even know that I was back then. Yeah. So I think it's just really important that, you know, that we check in and that it's okay, make it okay to talk about mental health, to tell others about our experiences, because we wouldn't, you know, we took medicine because we had a cold or a flu or, you know, or went to the doctor because we had COVID or whatever it is, or diabetes. It's not something that we are shameful of or shy away from. We can share it. If someone has a broken bone, we can talk about it, wish them well, send them get well cards. But oftentimes with mental health, we, in the past, and I mean, if we get into the whole history about how people with mental health conditions were treated back then decades ago, that's probably where a lot of the stigma came from. But with new research, new treatment, we know that people can get better. Recovery is possible. And there's, you know, not just one face or stereotypical look for someone with mental health challenges. It could be your most successful CEO to actors and actresses, to our doctors, our lawyers, our teachers, our baristas, our, you know, our truck drivers, whoever, construction workers, people all around of all walks of life are experiencing mental health challenges. In the past, we just haven't talked about it. And that's where all the shame and guilt and stigma lies, because we think we're the only ones going through it, or we have this image, you know, of whatever it is that people think of back then, like in a straitjacket, someone in an asylum, which, you know, that was just from decades ago. And it's so much more different now in terms of treatment, recovery, and being able to get the support.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You brought up some interesting points there that a lot of people might not connect the dots with, which is the correlation between physical health and mental health. So mental health challenges can bring about physical symptoms, but then we check out the symptoms and there's no physical cause. What kinds of physical symptoms can mental health challenges cause that people listening will maybe say, oh yeah, maybe that's what it is, and connect the dots that way?
Yeah, I would say over a decade ago, I remember laying down at night and I had started feeling my heart racing. I'm like, I'm supposed to get ready for sleep. I feel like I just ran a mile and I hadn't worked out at all. So that heart racing, thoughts racing, and just my body trembling or feeling just not physically, it was just, you know, it felt shaky and I didn't know what it was back then. And later on, I learned and found out that it was generalized anxiety disorder that I was going through. And, you know, with depression, the physical symptoms, just that fatigue, that lethargic tiredness, feeling like your body's so heavy, or feeling like there's, and I don't know how else to describe it. It could be a sunny day, but walking outside, it feels like there's a gray cloud consistently over my head. No matter what it is, what news people tell me, I couldn't feel excitement or happiness or joy. It was just a constant kind of just dread over each day, like to the point where making lunch felt like an overwhelming task, to the point where if someone invited me out to Disneyland, it felt like an overwhelming task to even shower. And to be honest, like there were days where I didn't shower for 3, 4, or 5 days because I was just so tired that I felt like I couldn't even get up and do things. I was only doing the bare minimum, which is I was able to get up, get to work, do what I needed to do, get home, and then immediately go to bed after I ate. And so those would be some of the symptoms I would say that people might notice physically.
Okay. What tips do you have for people to care for their own mental health on a daily basis? Similar to, you mentioned brushing teeth. What can we do for our mental health every day?
Yeah, I would say it looks different for everyone. People have to find what fits for them. I can share what I do. I enjoy meditating when I wake up in the morning, just for a few minutes a day. I try to do it most days, but of course, some days like today when it was a busy morning, I just would get out of bed and do what I had to do. And maybe I get my meditation in at another point in time in the day. For me, sometimes journaling when I'm having a really tough time processing my emotions or I get triggered by an event. Before I lash out on someone or before, you know, I respond, I might have to take a break and just get to my journal and really journal it out or do it on a consistent basis so that I'm learning more about myself, my emotions, doing things that we enjoy. It could be anything that takes us to the present moment. Like I know some people love rock climbing and mountain biking. That gives me way too much anxiety, but that brings them in the moment. For me, it's yoga and jogging. Some people might not like jogging, but they might enjoy knitting or sewing. Anything that they can do that's not always work-related, that they can just bring joy and pleasure to themselves, I would say. And if it's hanging out with friends or family, making sure that they make time for that as well.
Yeah, that's some amazing insight that you bring and some great tips there for, you know, it's about listening to what works for us. Let's look at business-wise. Some people have to have those goals in place. And other people are like, no, I don't want the goals. You know, that stresses them out. So, you know, it's different for each person. And we really need to check in with ourselves and see what's going to work for us.
Exactly. Everyone has a different style. And I do want to share one other important thing is something that I'm still working on is learning to express our emotions. Because I've learned that over time, when we tuck them away, we think that we could just forget about it. But all we're doing is just brushing the dust under the rug. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't go away. It just keeps piling up until it gets to a point where, you know, it just spills out or spills over. And if we learn to be able to express our emotions and how we feel in a constructive or healthy way, we can prevent those, you know, those moments where it does spill over and be able to kind of work through whatever it is that we're going through. As I've learned after tucking things away for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, those were all the things that came up in therapy for me. And after I kind of talked through it, I processed it, I can now talk about it without getting as triggered as I used to. And now I'm learning to express my emotions and myself more rather than just suppressing it with my loved ones, with my friends, with my family. It's hard. And it's still uncomfortable and challenging, but it's definitely helped me to be able to kind of manage my emotions and manage those thoughts that come up.
Yeah, that's some great advice there. Now, on the flip side, what should people do if they suspect that a loved one is struggling with mental health issues?
Yeah, that's something that we get a lot, especially from the families who join our group. And, you know, just being able to be there for that person to listen, to be curious and ask them how they're feeling, what's going on. And sometimes they might not know and they might not be able to express themselves, but just letting them know that we're there for them, that we love them, that we care for them. And sometimes it might need to be get to a point where they might need that additional help from a mental health professional. And that's where if we can approach them with kindness, with care, with concern, and just letting them know that we're worried for them. And that, you know, if we know someone else who's had help with a mental health professional and it's helped them and we've seen the success, we could share those stories so that they can feel less alone or less afraid to seek help, offering to go with them or call for that first appointment, but just really expressing our concern and being there. Sometimes if the person isn't ready yet, just being there to be able to listen and let them know that they're not alone, that you're there for them might be what they need at that moment.
Okay. So where can people find out more about NAMI, the work that you do, maybe join a support group or access some of your other services and resources?
Yeah, so we have our website at www.nami, so that's N-A-M-I, Southern Nevada, all spelled out, .org. Or they can call into our helpline at 702-890-9729. I also wanted to share that we are NAMI Western Nevada, so we have 4 affiliates in our state. They actually just launched a teen text line. in our state so that teens and youth who are finding themselves alone or struggling can text and get a peer support from a young adult on the line. Parents, adults, counselors, teachers, whoever can also refer, they can text into the line and make a referral for the youth that they're concerned about as well. And we also have a warm line for adults to call it. It's not a crisis line. If there is a crisis, if we do find that someone we care about or ourselves is contemplating suicide or are having a really tough time, we can call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. But if it's just, you know, they're needing someone to talk to and they're having a tough time, we have a warm line. So our NAMI Western Nevada warm line, you can find the number on there as well. And they can call in and it's just someone on the line that's a warm listening ear to talk things through with, to provide that support, to show that they care because they're a peer themselves and they know what it's like to go through those moments of isolation or loneliness or overwhelm.
Okay, great. So again, it's namisouthernnevada.org, N-A-M-I, southernnevada.org, or you can call 702-890-9729, 702-890-9729. And once you're on the website, there's a wealth of information and a ton of stuff that you can access, upcoming events, different support groups, and that sort of thing. So again, namisouthernnevada.org. And Trin, I want to thank you so much for being here with us today, continuing the conversation about mental health, which is so important and yet so often swept under the rug. So I really appreciate your time and thank you so much.
Thank you for your time as well, Heather, and thank you for reaching out. Happy to be here.
Hi, this is Lady Gaga. We often want to check in on our friends, but may not always have the proper tools for how to do that. When you take the Be There Certificate online course, you'll learn Be There's 5 golden rules, a simple, actionable framework that can teach us how to recognize when someone is struggling with their mental health, what your role should be in supporting that person, and how to safely connect someone who is suffering to get the help they need. I got my certificate, and I would love to celebrate you and yours. Learn the knowledge, skills, and confidence you need to safely support anyone who may be struggling with their mental health at BeTheirCertificate.org.
Welcome to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm your host, Heather Vail, and today I'm speaking with Michael Phillips, Public Information Officer for the Nevada State Contractors Board. May is National Military Appreciation Month, and the Nevada State Contractors Board offers specific programs to assist members of the military, National Guard, military spouses, and veterans in becoming licensed contractors or maintaining their licenses. Michael, thank you for being here today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me to talk about the Nevada State Contractors Board Veterans Assistance Program.
What exactly does the Nevada State Contractors Board do?
The Nevada State Contractors Board is the public protection agency that's in charge of promoting quality construction by licensed contractors in the state through a regulatory licensing system designed to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public.
How exactly does that licensing system protect the public's health and safety?
First of all, we have a very stringent licensing process, which includes a thorough background check of all applicants. We also check them for their education background and their experience background to make sure that they're experienced in their trade. In addition, they have to have the financial wherewithal to be able to perform the projects that they're licensed for. And through all that, that kind of helps to initially protect the public. And in addition, we have a disciplinary process for licensed contractors. And so any contractors that may do harm to a member of the public, the public can file a complaint with us. And then through that disciplinary process, we can fine, take away a contractor's license or do other discipline to them.
Okay. And what sorts of assistance programs do you have for active military, veterans, and spouses?
Well, thanks for asking. We have what's called our Veterans Assistance Program. And, you know, part of our responsibility is to promote licensing contractors. And we know that many of our veterans and members, active duty members of the military, can face challenges when they transition it back into civilian life and finding a new career or transitioning into a different career. And so we try to work with them to make it easier to get their licensing and even renew their license if they're a current contractor.
What are the eligibility requirements for the Veterans Assistance Program?
We have a couple different aspects of it. For current contractors, if you're a member of the military or National Guard and have a current and active contractor's license in the state of Nevada, the board will consider waiving the fees associated with the late renewal of your license if you're called to active duty at the time your license expires. That's just one of the ways we want to help current contractors so they can maintain their license, because we know that they're sacrificing a lot financially by serving in the military. For veterans who are returning to civilian life, we have a program that basically helps them apply their military experience to a different contracting field. We had an Army veteran who came in with a communications background in radio and satellite from the Army, and he applied for a C2D low voltage license, which allows him to work on telephone and sound systems, instrumentation and temperature controls, and also landscape lighting. And so that's just one example how we applied it. And another is we had a Marine veteran who had experience building barracks. So he applied for a B2 license, which allows him to build and remodel houses. And so we help streamline that process for the veterans, typically, you know, letting them apply some of that experience just so they can expedite the process for getting a license, which can be a lengthy process.
Now, clearly, there's a fairly large construction industry in Nevada and especially Las Vegas. But what percentage of contractors would you say are former or active military?
That's a really good question. We do not keep demographic information like that on the percentage of veterans. When they're applying for these programs, of course, we do verify that, but we don't keep that information in our system. But I will tell you that we know from talking with them and from some of the messaging and communications we do on veterans issues that there is a good percentage of contractors and those applying for licenses who are veterans. And again, you know, we know that they're going above and beyond for our community. And so it's just a way of us trying to extend that. You know, we also extend the program to military spouses as well. So we know, you know, if one member of the family is on active duty and a spouse has a contractor's license from another state and they've moved to Nevada, we will help them expedite the licensing process to go through the exam requirements and help them get a waiver for that so they can, you know, the spouse can resume their contracting position here in Nevada.
For people listening who aren't contractors but might hire a contractor, how do they know that the contractor they're hiring is properly licensed with the Nevada State Contractors Board?
That's a great question. There's several different ways you can tell if a contractor's licensed. The number one thing we advise everyone is to check with us first. A licensed contractor will provide you his or her license number. They will also have their license number on their vehicle as well as the name of their company. That's something that they're required to do by law. With that, we advise that you give us a call before you hire anybody or give them any money and verify that they are, in fact, who they say they are, and they are a licensed contractor. You can do it. It's really quickly by going to our website, which is nvcontractorsboard.com. Or you can give us a call at 702-486-1100. And again, we can quickly verify if the contractor is licensed, the scope of their license, because you want to make sure that they have the scope to be able to do the project and not be going above your project. Say if you're trying to do a $25,000 project and they only have $15,000 license, that's against the law and they shouldn't be bidding on a project like that. And also by contacting us, it'll let you know if they have any disciplinary record and have been in any trouble with us.
And on that website, can they also find out more about the military and veterans assistance programs?
They can. We have a page dedicated to our veterans assistance program. So if you just search for veterans assistance program, it will come right up and you can get that information there, or you can give us a call and we're happy to help you. We have a designated staff member that is responsible for that program.
Okay, awesome. So it's nvcontractorsboard.com, or you can give them a call at 702-486-1100, whether you're looking to find out whether a contractor has a valid license or if you want to find out more about the veterans assistance programs that they have available. Again, it's nvcontractorsboard.com. And Michael, I want to thank you so much for being here with us today and talking about the programs that you have available for our active and former military, as well as what consumers can do to verify the contractors that they're hiring. It's been very informative, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. And we just remind everybody to hire licensed contractors. Thank you very much.
Put a frog in boiling water and it'll jump right out. But put a frog in cool water and slowly heat it up, that frog will boil. As veterans, we tell ourselves the lie that we can handle anything. We let the water boil. You are not a frog. If you or a veteran you know needs support, don't wait. Reach out. Find resources at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach. Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Welcome to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm your host, Heather Vail, and joining me today is Malcolm Allo, Program Coordinator with the Southern Nevada Health District's Office of Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion. The SNHD recently announced a few non-smoking initiatives in partnership with local sports venues. Starting this season, Las Vegas Lights soccer games at Cashman Field and Las Vegas Aviators baseball games at Las Vegas Ballpark are smoke-free. And so is the entire UNLV campus. Malcolm, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Why did the Southern Nevada Health District decide that all the sports venues and educational campuses should be smoke-free?
I guess we can start with the university campus first, because that was the one that we started with the longest time ago.
Sure.
So about 20 years ago, the Surgeon General of the United States made a statement and a conclusion that said there is no safe level of secondhand smoke. So exposure, whether it's fleeting, if it's 1 minute, if it's 5 minutes, it is dangerous to those that are around secondhand smoke. So with that being said, 20 years ago, we launched a campaign, an initiative to help UNLV to turn them 100% smoke and tobacco free. Now, since the emergence of vape products, that policy has been expanded to smoke-free, tobacco-free, and vape-free. So 20 years ago, we launched that campaign, the initiative for UNLV to go smoke, tobacco, and vape-free. As of August 15th, 2022, this year coming up in here in a few months, UNLV on all its campuses will be 100% tobacco-free. We're super excited about that. Using that same idea that there is no safe level of secondhand smoke, we realized that sports venues and sporting teams here in Las Vegas is coming and it's here and we're excited about it, from the Aviators to the Lights to the Aces to the Raiders to the Knights. Well, all of those places have smoke-free protection. You know, you cannot smoke in the T-Mobile Arena. You cannot smoke at the Allegiant Stadium. But where you could smoke was at the Las Vegas Aviators and at the Las Vegas Lights. So we thought, in order to make these places true family-friendly facilities, we wanted to work with these facility owners and managers and tell them the benefits of being smoke-free and encourage them to adopt the policy. And thankfully, they have.
So the reason why those two venues in particular were not smoke-free yet, is it because they're outdoor venues?
Absolutely. So here in Nevada, we have the Nevada Clean and Air Act that was passed, but that includes indoor places. And there's a few exemptions, as we all know, gaming floors, tobacco retail shops, brothels, places that are age restricted over the age of 21, like bars and nightclubs. But another part of exempted locations was outdoor arenas, such as these, so stadiums. So So what these two teams did was they went above and beyond what is mandated by law in the Nevada Clean Air Act and created voluntary policy that's stronger than the Nevada Clean Air Act and create a policy that protects all its fans, visitors, and staff at their arenas.
So you mentioned that 20 years ago they discovered that there's no safe level of secondhand smoke, but how dangerous is secondhand smoke?
Secondhand smoke is extremely dangerous. Even some studies indicate that even if you are a non-smoker and you do not partake in cigarette usage or tobacco usage, you can have the same health risk as those who are current smokers. So eliminating exposure from secondhand smoke, whether if it's in a car, if it's in a house, if it's at a facility like these arenas that we're talking about, on a college campus or on a school campus, is extremely important because it will reduce lung injury, lung cancers, heart disease, et cetera. We just eliminate the exposure of secondhand smoke.
Now, you mentioned vaping products as well, and the general society consensus is that vaping is a lot healthier than smoking, for example, cigarettes. Obviously, that is not the case, or we wouldn't even be talking about vaping products in this conversation. So how dangerous is vaping?
So this is a good point, Heather, that a lot of people have the misperception that vaping is safer than traditional or combustible commercial cigarettes. What we do know is that vaping is not safe. So the nicotine levels and the tobacco products that are in vape products are just as harmful as combustible cigarettes. So for example, when we're talking about nicotine levels, the popular Juul products, according to Juul itself on their website, one Juul pod, so that pod that you put into that vaping device, has as much nicotine as 20 packs of cigarettes.
Wow.
And that is extremely alarming.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, very crazy. And what's more alarming is that, as we all know, is that this vape epidemic is occurring with our teens and our youth, right? So for years and years and years, public health has done a good job of weaning people off and helping those quit who are current tobacco users. And the rates of cigarette use has been decreasing year after year after year. But with the emergence of vape products, that trend is now reversing. And just to give you an example, right now in Nevada, the smoking combustible cigarette rate for a teenager is under 5%. But Heather, when we're looking at our vaping rates, we're over 20%. One in five teens in Nevada are using vape products, but less than 5% are using combustible cigarette products. So had vape products not emerged or came onto the scene, you can see we would have made some big wins and we would have been celebrating some big success here with the elimination of tobacco use.
Yeah. Now, do you think that the tobacco use, meaning cigarette smoking, would have still been that low if it wasn't for vaping?
Yes. So that rate has been decreasing since we started measuring back in 1998. So we've seen a decrease every year here in Nevada of combustible cigarette smoking. So we were right on track to get to the 5%. What we're seeing now is the reversal of that trend, and we're starting to see both electronic cigarette use uptake and vape use uptake as a result of vaping products.
Wow. So I can imagine that this issue is going to be somewhat divisive. The non-smokers were going to be like, oh, great. Yeah, this is wonderful. Smoke-free venues, you know, less places where we have to inhale secondhand smoke. And yet the smokers are going to say, but it's outdoors. It doesn't affect people. You know, I can imagine some pushback from the smokers who are used to being able to smoke when they watch baseball or soccer outside.
Right.
What has the feedback been so far?
So the feedback prior to the policy passage was the opposite. We've been receiving calls from people who are attended these games that said, hey, I'm trying to watch these games with my children, and there's people behind me on the concourse lighting up, and the smoke is infiltrating down to my seat, or I'm a season ticket holder, but the seat I purchased is now near the smoking section. So we would get those calls more often. Since the announcement of these policies, both at UNLV, the lights and the aviators, we have not received any complaint from anyone saying, hey, where am I supposed to smoke, et cetera. I think the way people view tobacco use and commercial tobacco use has changed. You know, this is the same arguments people had with airplanes, right? It's like, I can't fly on a plane because I can't use my cigarettes. But a sporting game, a sporting match, you know, typically 2 to 3 hours, we feel like you can do that. You can handle not smoking or using tobacco products for that long. But we understand, Heather, that smoking and nicotine addiction is real. So we encourage anyone who uses these products to quit smoking. And we have free resources for anyone to do so.
Okay. And what other types of venues besides the sports arenas and UNLV are now smoke-free?
So if you are a child here in Nevada, if you're born and raised here and you went to Little League, most of the parks here in Nevada are smoke-free. So then you are used to playing in a smoke-free facility. Then you go to your Clark County School District and you're on your high school team. Well, the Clark County School District is also smoke-free. So now it's just taking that pattern and taking it to UNLV, where you're going to go and further your education, and then where you can play and enjoy leisure activities like watching the Aviators game. So it's just a pattern that we created of a healthy lifestyle from childhood all the way to adulthood of living 100% tobacco-free. Other venues that are on our radar is the City of Las Vegas Parks and Recreation. You know, we want to be able to help them and encourage them to go smoking tobacco-free. The City of Henderson and the City of North Las Vegas have good policies where we think the City of Las Vegas can improve their policies when it comes to tobacco-free spaces. And also, we want to work with Clark County Parks and Recreation or any of these parks policy people when they have special events, whether it's the Renaissance Festival or Bite of Las Vegas or Petapalooza or Gay Pride. We want to be able to help turn those places 100% smoke and tobacco free. And we've had success doing so. For example, the Las Vegas Gay Pride is smoke free. The June Festival is smoke free, et cetera. So we're having success turning these signature community events tobacco free.
Okay. And what about the casinos, the restaurants, the bars, the theaters, the meeting venues?
So those places are, according to Nevada Community Act, some can and some cannot. So the general rule is, if you are going to allow anyone under the age of 21 in your facility, so if you are a concert venue like, you know, the Caesars Palace Coliseum, and there are people under the age of 21, that place has to be smoke-free. If it's age-restricted, where you have to be 21 plus, you can allow smoking. So casino floors, bars, and nightclubs are now allowed to use tobacco products. Now, hopefully that changes in the future. Hopefully we are able to change the way people view and feel about smoke-free environments and protections and get those smoke-free as well.
Okay. So where can people find out more about the SNHD and also access those resources that you mentioned to help them quit smoking if they choose to?
Yeah, absolutely. So anyone who are currently using tobacco products, whether it's combustible commercial cigarettes or vape products, cigars, snuff, etc. If you need help quitting smoking, we encourage everyone to call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. That's 1-800-784-8669. Or you can text QUIT-NOW to 333-888. Again, that's 1-800-QUIT-NOW. And that is available in any language. So whatever language you want to speak to, you can call these certified cessation counselors and they'll help you get on a path to living tobacco-free, whether that's through counseling or prescribing you nicotine replacement therapy like patches or gum or lozenges. We're here to help. And that resource is 100% free, Heather. Not a dime you'll be asked for. So you just call those numbers or text QUIT-NOW to 333-888, and these counselors can help you get on the way to living smoke and tobacco-free. If you want more information about the dangers of secondhand smoke or just want to read more about our tobacco control program and our initiatives, we encourage everyone to visit GetHealthyClarkCounty.org. Again, that's GetHealthyClarkCounty.org.
Okay, so once again, you can call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or text QUIT-NOW to 333-888. And the website, if you want to find out more, GetHealthyClarkCounty.org. I was actually there earlier, and I noticed there's also a smoke-free meeting directory that you have available there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, more need is our smoke-free housing directory. So if you're trying to look for somewhere where tobacco use or cannabis use or vape use is not allowed in a living facility, condominium or apartment, you can go onto our smoke-free housing directory and type in what type of housing you want, luxury, senior, et cetera, and then what part of town, and it'll provide where our smoke-free housing is here in the Valley. And we have over 60,000 units that have pledged and dedicated to being smoke and tobacco free. So we encourage anyone to go and use our smoke-free housing directory, again, on GetHealthyClarkCounty.org.
Wow, that's fantastic. So again, GetHealthyClarkCounty.org if you want to find out where you can have smoke-free meetings or live in a building that's smoke-free, GetHealthyClarkCounty.org. And if you want to access resources that will help you quit, 1-800-QUIT-NOW is the number to call, or you can text QUIT-NOW to 333-888.
Yes.
Malcolm, this has been wonderful. I want to thank you so much for being here today. And I was not aware of all these initiatives, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners were not as well. So thank you for bringing it to our attention.
No problem. Thank you for letting me have some time to share this information. You know, we just want to create an environment where we can live, learn, work, and play smoke and tobacco free. So I appreciate your time.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and I'm your host, Heather Vail. Today I'm speaking with Johnny White, CEO of ASA, a nonprofit global association of appraisers. ASA is a professional affiliation with member appraisers from all disciplines, working together to raise the standards of the appraisal profession. And Johnny's going to tell us how to determine the true value of our homes and possessions so we don't leave money on the table. Johnny, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Heather.
So what different types and disciplines of appraisers are there?
Well, for our organization, we have six different disciplines of appraisers. We have real property appraisers, which most people know real property appraisers. These are individuals that appraise homes, from residential homes to commercial. But we also have five other type of appraisers. We have personal property appraisers. So these are individuals that are appraising anything that's within the home, furniture, antique furniture, coins, antique cars, things of that nature that an individual may own or may have been passed down through the family. And then there's machine and equipment appraisers. These are individuals that appraise construction equipment, yachts, aircrafts, anything that's machine related. Then there's business valuation appraisers. These are individuals that appraise businesses. So let's say you're selling your business or you're trying to purchase a business or you may be merging a business. They're going to value that, the value of that business. And then we have gem and jewelry appraisers. So they appraise all types of jewelry, from diamonds to rubies to any type of jewelry that you may have. They're going to appraise that. And then the last group is the appraiser review. And we call them appraiser review managers. And these are individuals that normally work at the insurance companies or they work at the banks. And they're reviewing the appraiser reports that come in to ensure that they meet the value in order to either approve a loan or approve an insurance claim.
Okay. When should consumers consider getting an appraisal on something they own?
Well, it depends on what they want to do with that asset. It's something that's related to transaction. So if they are looking to sell the asset, or they're looking to gift it to someone else, that's kind of the areas where they're going to be looking for appraisers. There's other areas where they're going to be looking at appraisers, such as a divorce. You know, you have a number of assets between two parties, so you have to determine the value of those assets in order to split it between the two parties. Insurance needs, asset transfers, bankruptcy. You know, that might be another time that you may have to bring an appraiser in because, again, you have to determine the value in order to figure out what you're going to do with that asset.
Okay. And what questions should we ask before choosing an appraiser?
Well, the appraiser profession is pretty complex, so it's critical to ensure a potential appraiser is qualified. So the three things that they should be asking is, first, what is their educational background? Second, what their experience is? And third, do they have a designation? And designation is very, very important, because if they have a designation, that says that they are committed to this profession because they went through the process of getting additional education and have completed the coursework that's required to get that designation. So those three things you're looking for: their educational background, their experience, and they have a designation, and preferably a designation with ASA, our organization.
What would that designation look like? How do they verify that it's actually a legit designation?
It's easy to determine if they have an ASA designation. They can go to our website. We have a tool called Find an Appraiser. So if you go onto our website is appraisers.org, put in that appraiser's name into that tool, and it will show the designation that they have. And it will actually provide them a lot of information about that appraiser, their bio, the areas that they specialize in, in their location. So that's a way of determining if they have that ASA designation. Now, the process in which they go through to get the designation, there's a lot of coursework that they have to go through. We require our appraisers to go through what we call principle of evaluation courses. These are 3-day courses. They have to take all 4 of these courses. And then at the end of these courses, they have to take an exam. So that shows that they understood the work that they received in those courses. And then after they've completed these courses, they have to submit a appraisal report that shows that they understand how to value an asset. So once they've completed all of these items, that provides them the opportunity to get that ASA. And that's very important because, again, as a consumer, you want someone that has taken that additional step to get that designation to ensure that they're going to provide the appropriate information to come to that value opinion for that asset.
Okay. During the course of interviewing these potential appraisers, what are some of the red flags that we should look out for?
Well, as they say, in terms of that old adage, you get what you pay for. And this is true in this scenario also for an appraiser. You want to make sure that this appraiser is engaged in this profession. You don't want someone that, you know, is doing this on the side as a side job. You want someone that's full time in this profession. And that's what a designated member is going to do. You want to make sure that they are abreast of the current theories, trends, financial report standards, and understand the different laws that are associated with this profession. So if you are finding an individual, again, that has that designation, they are keeping up with all these different changes that are happening in the profession to ensure at the end of the day, when they provide that appraisal report, it's going to meet all of the standards that are out there for this profession.
Okay. But at the end of the day, regardless of the appraiser's education, experience, designation, or anything else, how do we actually know we're getting an honest appraisal of the true value of our jewelry, collectible, home, vehicle, whatever it happens to be?
Well, that's a good question. So let's say that you go through the process and you know you have something appraised. And at the end of the day, you felt that that appraisal report wasn't what you thought it should be. You can question that appraisal. You can question, you know, the sources that they used in order to obtain the end result of that opinion of value. And then that appraiser can take the information that they received from the consumer and may go back and make some changes depending on, you know, the information that was given to them. The other way that you can also determine if this report is to your liking is you can get another appraiser to do appraisal report. So you get a second opinion and you could take that second opinion to compare it to the first opinion, determine if that's what you're looking for. So just like a lot of professions, when you go to the doctor and say the doctor gives you a diagnosis that you don't necessarily agree with, you go to another doctor and have them do the diagnosis and then you can compare the two. Same thing in this profession. You could go get a second opinion to determine if that's really what you were looking for in that value.
Okay. How long does it take to get an appraisal from start to finish?
It really depends on the complexity of the asset. For example, you know, you may have an estate, and that estate may have a lot of different personal property items from jewelry to artwork to furniture. So it may take this appraiser a number of days to do that, or it could be just one piece. So it could take an appraiser, you know, just a day to do that. So it really depends on the complexity of the asset.
You know, here in Las Vegas, people are used to just walking into the pawn shop. I mean, I know you've seen Pawn Stars, right? So,
yes.
So what's the difference between that? I mean, obviously it's TV, so we don't see necessarily the whole lengthy process. And obviously they're going to pick certain ones to highlight on the show. But how does that differ from a typical appraisal process?
Well, I mean, as you know, on TV, that's not real life. The difference, I think, and I don't know, you know, who the appraisers are that work for some of the TV shows, is 9 times out of 10, I don't think there's a lot of designated appraisers that work for these organizations. So you're going to get, you know, a different take on things when you're not working with a designated appraiser.
Okay. Besides that designation that you keep mentioning, what are some of the other benefits of choosing an appraiser who's a member of an organization like the ASA?
Well, it's a lot of things there. I mean, they're keeping up with all of the different standards. There's a standard that the appraiser follows. It's called USPAP, Uniform Standard Professional. And that standards are updated every 2 years. And so as a member of our organization, they have to ensure that they are up to date with those standards. So they are required to take our USVAP every 2 years. So you have that in terms of understanding the standards. There's also the requirement of a continuing education. They have to get a certain amount of continuing education each year in order to keep their designation. So that ensures that they are keeping up with what's happening in the market because they're continuing to go back and get education that's related to their profession. So that's another reason why you want to have a qualified appraiser because they're keeping up with the new trends on what's happening in the industry. So those are probably the key elements there. They're keeping up with the standards and they're keeping up with the market because it's a requirement as being a designated member.
Okay, so you mentioned the website, but tell us once again, how do we find a qualified appraiser or maybe just find out more about ASA and what you guys do?
So our website is very easy. It's appraisers.org. Again, appraisers.org. And on the website, there's many tools there to help you understand the appraiser profession and what to look for. And then there's the tool there so that you can find an appraiser that's in your area. And there's also information if you are looking to change careers and want to become an appraiser yourself. We have details on how to become an appraiser and to join this profession. Because one of the things that we found, and you probably talked about this, a lot of people are looking for flexibility in terms of what they do. And this profession really provides flexibility. You know, once you've gone through the process of getting your designation, you have the flexibility of making your own schedule in terms of the work that you're going to take on. So it's a lot of flexibility there. So all of this information is on our website. And again, that's appraisers.org.
Okay. So once again, appraisers.org. If you want to go and find a qualified appraiser, find out more about what ASA does, or even start your own career as an appraiser, that's appraisers.org. Like Johnny said, super simple, appraisers.org. And Johnny, I want to thank you so much for being here with us and for talking about this because it gives people an idea of how they can honestly get true value for their possessions so they're not getting ripped off. You know, they're walking away with everything that they deserve for it and making sure that they're dealing with appraisers who actually know what they're doing and are held to a certain level of accountability. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much, Heather. It was great being here with you.
I'm 54, so it's too late to start saving for retirement, right?
Not right. Starting to save, even in your 50s, can really make a difference.
Right now, saving seems hard to wrap my head around.
AARP makes it easy. Go to aceyourretirement.org and chat with Avo, the friendly digital retirement coach. It's free and only takes 3 minutes.
I like 3 minutes.
Answer some questions and get personalized tips to help boost your retirement savings.
Thanks.
Just head to aceyourretirement.org. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. May is Older Americans Month, and the Alzheimer's Foundation of America invites you to have a free virtual memory screening. These take just a few minutes and are open to all ages. Find out more or schedule your free memory screening at alzfdn.org. May is also Mental Health Awareness Month, and the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI, would like to help you out with your mental health journey. Find out about services, resources, or sign up for a free support group at namisouthernnevada.org. That's namisouthernnevada.org. And May is also National Military Appreciation Month. To celebrate, the Nevada State Contractors Board is spreading the word about their veterans assistance programs and other resources. These programs help veterans, military members, and military spouses in becoming licensed contractors or maintaining their licenses. Explore the programs or apply for assistance at nvcontractorsboard.com. Monday's Dark is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include this Monday, May 23rd at 8 p.m. benefiting Operation Homefront, Monday, June 6th at 8 p.m. benefiting the Vegas Casino Canine Foundation, and Monday, June 20th at 8 p.m. benefiting NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, Southern Nevada. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. The United Way of Southern Nevada is hosting their 65th anniversary Golf United tournament next Thursday, May 26th at the Revere Golf Club. Join Chet Buchanan and UWSN President and CEO Julian High to honor the legends and leaders trailblazing the path for future generations. Buy your tickets or find out more at uwsn.org/golf. HopeLink of Southern Nevada is celebrating 30 years of preventing homelessness, underemployment, and assisting underserved Las Vegas Valley families. Their 30th anniversary party will be on Thursday, June 2nd at the M Resort Spa Casino. The VIP reception is at 5:30 p.m. and general admission at 6:30 p.m. To purchase tickets or get more information on HopeLink, including ways to volunteer, visit link2hope.org. That's link2hope.org. The Bottega Exchange co-working space is hosting a networking fair with proceeds going to support Baby's Bounty on Saturday, June 11th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Bottega Exchange. Baby's Bounty is a local nonprofit that supports and empowers at-risk families through education and essential tools for raising healthy babies. Find out more about the organization at babiesbounty.org and see all the event details at bottegaexchange.com. Ken Klein's Still Life Art Exhibit is showing through July 5th at the West Charleston Library, located on the CSN campus between Jones and Torrey Pines. Enjoy this local artist's hyper-realistic oil paintings featuring historical pop culture subjects. Proceeds from art sales are being donated to charity. And the Nevada Wheelchair Foundation is giving out free wheelchairs to those who need them and can't afford them. To request a wheelchair or help with the mission, visit NevadaWheelchairFoundation.org.